All right. Welcome back, everyone, to Red Spotlight Entertainment. I'm Lexus, joined by David, of course, for our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. reaction commentary series. Made for the longtime S.H.I.E.L.D. fan wants to come back on here and talk endlessly about one of our favorite shows of all time. Last time we were here, we talked about the mid-season finale, or if you want to call it the finale to Season 3 A, which was Mavith, which was an explosive finale. And today we are at the beginning of a new, I guess, the second half of Season 3, or I guess the beginning of Season 3B, however you want to call it. Today's episode is called Bouncing Back, and this was written by Monica Owusu-Breen and directed by Ron Underwood. It was broadcast originally on March 8th, 2016 on ABC Network to 3.52 million viewers, of course, having our returning cast, Clark, Greg, Ming-Na Wen, Chloe Bennett, Ian DeCastaker, Elizabeth Henstridge, Nick Blood, Adrian Palicki, Brett Dalton, I believe, was also... Oh, no, not Brett Dalton, I guess. Henry Simmons and Luke Mitchell. Of course, our returning guests, Powers Booth as Gideon Malik, Juan Pablo Raba as Joey Gutierrez, William Sadler as Matthew Alice, Natalia Cordova-Buckley makes her debut as Elena Rodriguez. Mark DeCascos as Guerra. Spencer Treat Clark as Werner Von Strucker. Yancy Arias as Victor Ramon. And Gabriel Salvador as Lucio. Some information as far as the writing of the episode. The episode opens with a mysterious flash forward to 3 months in the future, showing an unidentified S.H.I.E.L.D. agent seemingly dead in space. EP Marisa Chancharoan called it the promise of something fairly ominous to come and stated, "We will be uncovering things from the mid-season opener all the way to the finale. We will slowly be discovering what the image is." Her fellow showrunner, Jed Whedon, explained that the decision to use the flash-forward device in the episode was made to kick off the second part of the season with a mystery. All right, let's go ahead and get into the comments that we received from last time. David, go ahead and take it away.
Mm-hmm. Okay, first one's from Serenity. It says, "I'm not looking for mercy or absolution, Ward. But Hive and Daisy will be looking for absolution."
That's, yeah, you really love the writing there.
Yeah. next one's from...
honest to God, though, like, that literally occurred to me when I was watching it. It's like interesting how they use the word absolution, because that's going to come back later this season. Mm. Like it's if you watch the show enough times, that one was going to, it stood out to me, and I'm glad it stood out to somebody else. So thank you, Serenity, for pointing that out.
And next one's from Gary Marshall. The piece of music at the end is called Crossing into Darkness, and it's one of my favorite pieces of the show. It was really good.
Yes.
I don't know if you saw it, but I put it in for like the longest time, you know, the whole music playing and everything. But man, it's really, really good. I can listen to that all the time. The way it builds and builds to a crescendo as the heroes return and are reunited with their friends, only to drop when Gemma realizes that Will isn't there. Breathtaking. There's a small clip of Bear conducting this piece, only a minute long. It's linked. It shows how they record the music with the scene shown on a large screen in the background whilst Bear conducts the orchestra. That's cool.
Do you want to watch it?
Yeah, if it's like a minute long.
So good, man.
His hair is so short here. Oh my gosh, it's gone so long.
This was 2016.
Yeah. So.
Actually, no. I think this would have been 2015.
Yeah. Okay. That's cool.
That Bear guy knows how to make some pretty good music, doesn't he?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Thank you. Thank you for sending that clip.
Gary Marshall.
What was it? Okay. Thank you very much for sending that. Always enjoy, and I always want to say for those of you who follow us, if you have anything you want us to react to that involves the show, please leave the links, because we would definitely love to really absorb as much media as there is out there. Because the whole point of this podcast is to enrich ourselves in the culture that is S.H.I.E.L.D. And oftentimes that may not be as expansive as I think we would have liked, especially at that time. But still, if you have something that you think we would like to react to and it pertains to where we are covering the show, please go ahead and do that. Thank you for that. And yes, Crossing Into Darkness might be the best piece of music on the show. Like, it is really, really good. And mm-hmm. I think you could tell how much of a response they got out of it, because it kept coming back, I think, for a lot of big moments on the show. Mm-hmm. Okay, next one.
Yeah, last one's from S.H.I.E.L.D. Lids. The show never focuses on how exactly Hive made it out, but it does give you clues as to how it is possible. First off, earlier in the episode, Simmons tells Malik and his team that their calculations are off. This establishes that Malik's calculations and timing of the portal time remaining open and Ward's calculations that he used to set his watch are not in sync. This means when Malik later on is in front of the containment pod, he tells his men they have less than 15 minutes to gain control of the portal room from S.H.I.E.L.D. using his watch, but that is not correct. So, yeah, already it's establishing that, like, yeah, what the information Ward has versus what Malik is very different. So the portal could have been open a lot longer than we thought it would have been.
Yeah.
So it was more than a minute, probably. And keeps going. Mac, Daisy, and Coulson and Fitz all head straight towards the containment pod after leaving the portal. The only way they could do that is if Hydra left that area already, and the only reason they would do that is if they think they ran out of time. Which, yeah, I actually forgot about the soldiers still trying to break in, so... Yeah, meaning they already left, for sure, Malik, and then there would have been a clear spot for them. Since the pod is some distance away from the portal, in that time it took to get there, Hive would have climbed out of the portal since he was right behind them. Mac tells May to shoot when they already got to the pod. He would then go to the road to meet Malik. So, yeah, basically the distance between them going to the pod, going up, and shooting it could have bought him some time. So, okay. Yeah, I actually, it's the whole calculations are off thing that actually does help. It makes me, you know,
rework the whole thing. Yeah, and I have forgotten about that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I didn't take that into account, but that's a really good explanation. Thank you so much for that one.
Mm-hmm.
All right, should we go ahead and get started with today?
Yep.
All right, let's go ahead and begin bouncing back in 3, 2, 1, and go on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's interesting because, like I did say earlier, this was a while after the finale aired. So the finale was like in December. This is now after the mid-season break. We're now in March. Mm. And in between these two episodes, the first season of Agent Carter aired on TV. Actually, wait a minute. Yeah, I did, right? Or was it the second season of Agent Carter?
Oh, I can't remember.
I can't remember. Maybe it was, say, season two.
Maybe, because it did start with season two some time after this show came out. So it could have been the second season by now.
Yeah. And that would have been the last one.
Sadly.
Yeah, very much so. This is a very unique way of opening up this part of the season. This is the first time they attempt to do something like this. Very ominous, of course.
Mm-hmm.
This reminds me, it feels like a little bit of a throwback, right? To how the a lot of the season one episodes would open.
Mm-hmm. I was actually just thinking that too. It's just like, all right, you know, we're back to normal now. Let's just go back to, you know, weekly, I don't know, spy stuff.
Episodic
stuff, yeah.
Yeah, this one, sometimes the show feels the need to give us a bit of a reprieve from a lot of, like, the tense stuff that happens. Mm-hmm. So they'll throw one of these episodes out there to kind of, like, reset some things.
No, yeah.
And this is actually kind of an important episode, too.
Mm. It happens with a lot of shows, you know. You build up to something, you take a step back, you know, let us know what each character's thoughts are as to what happened recently. I say this all the time with Supernatural. It's the same thing over and over in every season where it's just like something big happened last season. Now the brothers have to like go back hunting, see if they can get back in sync because of what happened and all that. And then they go with whatever the next big thing they have to deal with. And this is basically the same thing. But the thing that I always loved, we're going to, you know, basically start seeing it here, is I love that 3-story arc of every season that they do, especially with like as the series keeps going. Like, I don't know, I just it never felt that way with other shows, especially like with like Arrow and The Flash. I always felt they were dealing with one main thing throughout the entire series, and I just felt, you know, they were just prolonging it for so long, and I'm kind of like, can we move on from this? You know, and you always just get those random episodes that like nothing really happens, and it's the ones that I would call filler in those moments. But this one though, I do not feel the same at all.
Shield doesn't do that.
No,
Shield doesn't do this. It just ever. They always give you something that's worth your time.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, this is dealing with the ramifications of the fact that the head of the ATCU is assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
That was the president's task force. So what is the president going to do now? So now he's going to work with S.H.I.E.L.D.,
mm-hmm.
which is going to come in and out throughout this season. And ultimately, this is the beginning of S.H.I.E.L.D. being legit again, which is a big thing in season 4.
Yep. And going
so back, again, it's like, go ahead. Go
just
ahead.
Going back to normal of it being like a very, very top secret spy organization, not this whole big one as it was before.
But it's really impressive how the show manages to deal with, like, they move a lot of pieces when it comes to like either transition, like this whole episode is really transitioning from the last season into this new season, this new mid-season, I guess. Mm-hmm. And nothing, I think, ever feels like, okay, we just have to get through this to get to the good stuff the next week. Like, they always do the best they can to put in a good episode. And this one has an interesting dynamic where you have, I think, Coulson and May doing their own thing, like right here. Disagree. Sorry, President Ellis, I disagree. The public has a very, very short memory. They forgot a pandemic happened and people died.
Mm.
And it was kind of somebody's fault for that, but
yeah,
you know.
Mm-hmm. Also, what I'm liking too, this first part of the season, you know, they kept bringing up the fact like, hey, what's happening with Daisy's task force? You know, like, they were going to build that. And then obviously they gave reasons as to why it's been slowed down, why they not really want to rush it too much and all that. And I loved the reasonings for it, especially with Coulson explaining it. But now we have it. We have Daisy and what's his name?
Joey.
Joey
and Lincoln.
Yeah, Lincoln for sure, but we don't see him yet.
And Yo-Yo eventually.
Yeah, but like, you know, we're building it up now. It's just like, oh, this is cool. So it's just really nice seeing the both of them together, Daisy and Joey, working together.
It's a really interesting dynamic set up here where the president of the United States is literally helpless to really help S.H.I.E.L.D. when it comes to Gideon Malik, because he inserted himself into all like the top heads of everything. It's kind of like Jeffrey Epstein, right? Mm. It's like he made friends with the most powerful people. And so he has dirt, I guess, on everybody and was untouchable for a long time. So that's the equivalency that I can imagine here.
I was so glad we got that line though too. It's just like I would have been curious too, you know. It's like if it's safe to do so, okay.
Get powers out of it?
Yeah.
So the thing is, like, you never know how it's gonna affect you. Like, you could end up like Daisy or Lincoln, or you could end up like Gordon or Raina.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's worth it. Three years. Oh, yeah.
Huh? No, yeah.
Some people do take 3 years of high school Spanish. I was like, what? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That was a weird camera shot, though. Like, he notices her, and she's just literally standing there. Just not really looking at anything. You could at least put a guy there. Be like, I don't know.
That's the Kree for you.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of all about that. Isn't there like a Kree character called the Central Intelligence? Wasn't that in Captain Marvel?
Yeah.
Right? The Central Intelligence, yeah.
Yeah, we got that in Captain Marvel, and then the Marvels said...
What was that, by the way? Was that an AI?
Yeah.
God thing? What was that? Okay.
I'm pretty sure it was just an AI. They showed it in Captain Marvel. And then in the second one, they established that she just destroyed it.
Oh, yeah. She really did fuck him up, didn't she? Yeah. Jesus Christ. Yeah, at least would have like cameras and microphones. I would have the room bugged just to see, you know, what would happen when he doesn't have visitors.
I don't know if they use CG to make them look like that, but it looks good.
Either that or makeup, but it did look really good.
Oh, yeah, either way.
The way he was just like
What great timing, though, too.
Right?
You can see my partner's shoe, by the way.
Cutthroat Coulson really is something.
I know. He's really going at it.
Like, this is...
You don't have to take it that like that either way, too. It's just like, you know, she probably... Well, I guess they don't know the whole context yet, dang it. Never mind.
Yeah, we don't really...
That's so cool.
Yeah, that was a good
That's
one.
That's so cool.
What is he eating?
I think that was
some
like
kind
a
of like raw animal.
For sure, but it looked like a bacon wrapped turkey leg, but super raw or something.
It's interesting how every time they bring back the memory machine, we see some really fucked up shit.
Yeah.
Like, come on, every time. And they're going to reuse the memory machine, I think, for the last time officially in the season finale of this season in a really interesting way. So it all comes back. I do want to say that I appreciate how much they allow, particularly Elena, to, I mean, I think every line of dialogue this entire episode, and she has a lot of lines, obviously, this episode, are almost entirely in her language.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty rare for a show like this to do, because usually what would happen is they may start speaking English as soon as, like, I don't know, halfway through their debut episode.
Yeah.
So I do like this a lot. And, like, her Spanish is genuinely, like, great.
Yeah.
Like, there are some that are like Selena Gomez, where it's like, that's not Spanish, that's High Valyrian.
Okay.
It's like, whatever that, you know? So, you never know what you're going to get with that. But I do believe, I think, well, this is, I don't know the nationality of Natalia Cordova, but I do think Yo-Yo is supposed to be Colombian, right? Yeah, it's Colombia that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
Bogota, Colombia, I think, right?
Yeah.
I think.
Okay, so now they know the context. I was trying to bring that up in the earlier, where he was, what was it, Hunter? I was like, oh, how could it happen to her? It's like, oh, she got powers. That's what happened. They're kind of like, hey, man, what the heck? But they shouldn't have taken it that way, because, like, her thing is she finally has power to do something good about it and all that. So. Oh, shit.
It's this part of the season where we're really beginning to see all kinds of people get powers. And I feel like all of this is, like, in the first half of season three, we're kind of like, we're told a lot of the fears that Rosalind Pryce has about, like, what could happen, you know, with normal people getting powers like this. And we mostly just see it manifest with Lash. But I think with, like, this beginning, this episode really kind of, like, sets the stage for, like, oh, no, like, all kinds of people can, you know, get powers, and we're going to be able to see them use it in very different ways. Like, with Elena, she was genuinely, like, becoming a freedom fighter in a way, like, you know, for her country, and to kind of, like, fight against corruption. Meanwhile, the cops themselves, the corrupt police here, got their own player, and look how they're already taking advantage of that too. So it's like, really, really, I like how the show is, like, playing this out, how it's a bit of a glimpse of, like, of what would happen to normal people.
Mm-hmm.
The show doesn't really delve too much into, like, you know, the normal, but this is a nice, like, window into, like, what it would be looking like.
Yeah. Just got out of it.
Yeah.
But then also too, the MCU had it right here. Could have worked out.
Didn't they?
Could have.
Right?
Had the X-Men, yeah. You know?
Like, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. really did a lot of groundwork for X-Men. Even though, because, like, basically Inhumans on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. are not treated like the Inhumans, like, there's no Inhumans royal family. They take Inhumans in name only, and they take a bit of the mythology, but they basically the story of the Inhumans on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is just X-Men.
Yeah, basically. I mean, maybe not X-Men because they didn't have the rights at the time, but like either way, other characters that they could have brought in, like Kamala Khan earlier. I don't know what other Inhuman characters there are, but just to even, you know, keep building it up. That's the thing. As much as I like the first, you know, four phases of the MCU, they could have done better at bringing up more and more characters towards the end. But
I do like this scene a lot where you have Joey kind of translating for Mac, but this I think establishes the first real connection between Mac and Yo-Yo. And the first thing that they have in common that is such a personal thing for them is their faith. And that's something that's going to continue to bind them as the show continues to unfold. Because I feel like it was really this scene that kind of like proved to Yo-Yo, okay, these guys are different.
Mm-hmm.
They're not just more corrupt cops. It's the second time in this episode somebody who's tied up is just like has a smirk on their face. Oh, you're gonna get it right now. That's amazing.
That's such a oh, that's funny too. But in a lot of action movies or shows, there's always that thing where they have the gun, but they don't shoot it from a distance. They just walk up to the person, point the gun like right at their faces, and then that's when the person can disarm them and all that.
Yeah.
I like that you can avoid that here with Yo-Yo because it's just like, no, we have to get it from a distance so we can show off our powers and mm-hmm. all that. And it just, yeah, that works in their favor.
Oh. Damn. Oh, shit. That must have hurt.
That's.
Yeah, that's a bit graphic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Better get used to, I guess, wearing those glasses for life.
Because
they ain't coming off. he's not joking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the scary thing about like somebody like him. Do you see how you said it'll cost me a few millions?
Yeah,
it's like nothing. It's like nothing to him. It's a hard conversation to have. One of those things where you can just tell already those two are going to get together, aren't they?
Yeah, right from the beginning.
You just kind of already see it.
More chemistry already than Daisy and Lincoln right there.
Oh my God, right? Oh boy, that's... it's so funny how in the last episode they were making out and no one gave a shit.
Yeah.
It was like... Oh, yeah, Fitz and Simmons are in this episode. I forgot about them.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's just that they're not really doing much with them. They're just together. They kiss, you know. They have a little, it's a few quips to each other. And that's about it. Compared to what they did with Rosalind and Coulson, like, I mean.
Yeah. Earlier, when she said, I miss you, and he turns around and says, I'm here, they use this as one of the clips in one of the final episodes. When I think they're trying to use the machine, the Chronicom mind prison, to find out where Fitz is hiding.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they cleverly used it because... it was kind of like a wink and a nod to the viewers, because we missed Fitz that season because he couldn't be there to film it. So it's just like, it's like, we miss you. And it's like Fitz saying, I'm here. I haven't gotten anywhere. So it's just an interesting, like, little bit of, like, I guess, trivia. Why I think they used this clip when they, I believe it might have been episode 11 of season 7 when they do it. Oh, look. There it is. That's what Fitz is doing all episode. Yeah, oh, he threw himself in his work. There it is. Okay. That may have that may be one of the most like sentimental things May has ever said.
Yeah.
But it's like it's the right tone for it too, because yes, what does it mean to join the cavalry? It just means like having sometimes you're wounded, sometimes you win. Like some you need to do it's this idea of like it sucks that I have to do this, but I have to do this for a greater good. War needed to be put down. And of course, who could have possibly seen this coming?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and to be fair, I believe it was a Coulson or Fitz shoots a flare at Will's body. So it's like from Fitz's and Coulson's perspective, I don't know. They don't know much about this thing, this entity anyway. So I guess like from their eyes, they would have just like assumed, oh, well, I guess that's that. Anyway, let's go. And that's the moment Gideon really lost, because from that point forward, Gira is like no longer his.
I'm glad he's back though. He's so great.
Yeah, it's one of these things where you realize like, I mean the show really knew what they had with like General Talbot. Like he I think definitely has just been a character that made an impact from the very beginning. I if I'm not mistaken, we haven't seen Talbot since season 2A.
Yeah, I think so.
So it's been a minute. In fact, it may have even been like a whole full season since we've seen him. So they do bring him back in some really nice ways, which means that Adrian Pasdar is great as the character. Let me get into some quick reviews here, and then we can get into... We'll close off with Ami today. Let's go to the AV Club. Usually Oliver Sava does this, but now I think this is Alex McLevy. It's not a coincidence that this episode of S.H.I.E.L.D. went flying by like a bullet train, stopping only in the final minutes to take a breath and look around to see where things lay. Almost everyone's in an emotionally fragile place. Coulson's still grieving the death of Rosalind. Fitz and Simmons are on eggshells around each other. Even our mysterious ward alien is hurting. So the team, and the series, does what it does best whenever no one's terribly excited about opening up and sharing some feelings. It charges headfirst into action, kicks some ass, and enjoys the exhilaration of a frenetic adventure, not stopping for breath, or more than a heartbeat in a certain people's case, is a good way of getting some additional distance from traumatic events, and bouncing back is a textbook example of how all the bells and whistles of a standard issue S.H.I.E.L.D. case can actually function as a diverting distraction from interpersonal relationships for both the audience and the characters. And that's not to say that the episode wouldn't have benefited from a little more engagement with the mental and emotional state of its core team, but when an episode is racing along with such gung-ho commitment, it makes for good fun, even if in retrospect it looks a little thin. The center of the episode on first glance appeared as though it would involve a new member of the team, Elena Rodriguez, aka Yo-Yo, although those of you invested in the comics realm also know her as Slingshot, a core member of Secret Warriors. It took all of 30 seconds after the first good look at her to realize she would turn out to be something other than the villain our heroes initially pegged her as, since she was very nice to Mac after knocking him out, of course, and turned out to be stealing guns to protect her community, not commit violent acts. But after an accelerated introduction to the team, Yo-Yo was on her way back to Bogota, albeit armed with a shield communication watch to stay in touch. Presumably, we'll be seeing her again sooner than later. But still, it was a bit of a surprise departure after essentially dedicating the mid-season return to her debut. Well, this is going to be a big character for the rest of the show, so it's okay. Like, thinking about this character, it's like, do you think it was a mistake to not immediately, like, have Yo-Yo be in every episode? Because, like, Yo-Yo doesn't really start being in every episode until, like, really season 5. Like, season 4, she is a lot more... season 4, I think, is the first season where, like, she's officially, like, on the team, even though she's not in every single episode. But with season 5, 6, and 7, she is in every single episode. So it's just, like, with seasons 3... Well, I think with this season, she's, like, in this episode, and she'll come back, like, in, I think, 2 or 3 more episodes this season. So she's not really, like, she's, like, a guest star, really, at this. She's a new character that's going to have a big future on in the show. Season 4, I mean, I consider her a main character, but, like, they definitely don't have the space for her, I think, yet. Because, I mean, with right now, I think with Yo-Yo, they probably didn't want to have her on because they knew they had to deal with the departure of Bobby and Hunter, which is going to happen in 2 weeks. And then to have, like, Yo-Yo be on the team as soon as Bobby and Hunter leave, I don't think they wanted to do that to her.
Mm-hmm.
Because then I think you would have had a situation in which, like, fans would be like, they're already introducing a new team member after these two leave. So I think that's a big part of it. And I think we're also meant to feel like there are people missing. I think for better or worse, once Bobby and Hunter leave, for the rest of this of season 3, you do feel their absence. They even have a whole episode where Mac's like, you know what, I'm just, like, depressed as shit. I gotta get some downtime because it's really getting to me. So that's one thing. And then with season 4, what else happens? They add a lot more characters, too. It's like Talbot comes back. There's also the Patriot, which is Mace, Director Mace. Ada, Radcliffe is a bigger part of it. Ghost Rider, the Russian superior guy, the Senator Nadir. Like, that doesn't even get into... there's a lot of new characters that get introduced. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't think... they probably also weren't too sure just yet. Although, if you watch this episode, I think they're pretty confident what they're setting up between Mac and Yo-Yo. So I think they definitely have plans for this character, but it just didn't fit in with what else they had going on in this story for this season, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
that's what we're thinking of. Back to the review here. Then again, we have plenty of folks who need checking in on, starting with everybody's favorite, will they, won't they, Fitzsimmons. This week is Fitz's turn to be a little silly, as he's been keeping his distance from Gemma for a rather inexplicable reason that he didn't do enough to try and save Will. Luckily, Simmons is sensible enough for the both of them. I miss you, she says plainly, brushing aside his concerns by pointing out that Will died helping her escape. And that the notion that Fitz could have done anything to bring him back is absurd. So they both smile and decide to start over. As friends, don't get me wrong, I'm happy to see them back on Team Fitzsimmons, but Does anyone really think they'll be able to keep up the buddy-buddy routine for long before the profound feelings they hold for one another bubble to the surface? I think it's like the language here is interesting when she says, like, let's start over. But I don't think it's really accurate to what happens. I think she says to start over to just reset the table because there's just too much baggage to deal with right now. And let's just try and get over that. Let's just go back to, like, being friends for right now. But the good thing about this show is when it comes to any other show, that would have meant that, I guess they're not going to be a couple until, like, a season later or two seasons later. No, this actually happens a lot quicker than what this would suggest. Mm-hmm. So there is that to deal with. Coulson, meanwhile, is 100% on Operation Malik Takedown. He's nowhere near resolving the anger and sadness that Rosalind's death caused. But as May points out, once the dust has settled, maybe you're not supposed to get over it. Some things leave a scar, she says, and the change to Coulson is likely permanent. Not that she minds the company. You join the cavalry. It's interesting to see S.H.I.E.L.D.'s boss to try wage his battle on multiple playing fields. Meeting the president, calling up Malik just to shine him in with the knowledge that every link to the phone call is now a target, and most significantly of all, forcing the young Von Strucker to take a trip to Tahiti. It was uncomfortable for everyone to hear "please kill me" being repeated once more, but at least this time it finally gave Lincoln a chance to do something right for a change. It looks like the show is determined to shove, oh god, the shade, the Daisy Lincoln romance down our throat. Oh god. This is flawless. I gotta read that sentence again. It looks like the show is determined to shove the Daisy / Lincoln romance down our throats, much like their tongues. And I appreciate them trying to give him some reasons to stick around beyond the relationship. But for now, Daisy is still the most interesting thing about him. Sorry, Lincoln.
Damn. Yeah. Like I mentioned, it's just like they're not really doing much with them. Like that ending. When they were together, it was the only time they were together, which was weird. And I mean, it's understandable why, because you needed Joey there because of Yo-Yo speaking Spanish. You need him. He speaks Spanish. Like that just fits. Would have liked it. I think they would have, if they maybe took a chance of, you know, whatever operation that was going on, they worked together. I mean, Daisy, Lincoln, and Joey working together, you know, we finally have the team. You know, the team that she wanted, blah, blah, blah. And I don't know. That would have been cool to see that in the beginning. They, you know, separate because he's got to do his own thing too. He helps out whenever he can on the field. I don't know. They could have done more, I think.
Yeah, I think they're going to try some more next week. But it's just like, this is the issue. There are just like too many episodes that have like already come and gone. 11 at this point of the season. And, like, there is this is ultimately the problem with, like, maybe why it's not working. Because maybe, no, I'm not even sure. I'm pretty sure Jed and Marissa were like, okay, we want to commit to this being a couple. But I think the mistake they made is that maybe there were just too many things happening because... And maybe there were too many players. Because if you wanted to make us feel that romance, maybe there should have been more time paid attention to that. It feels like there was just maybe more. There were too many things they were tackling at the same time. Because what excuse is there for the fact that in one episode, I already ship Yo-Yo and Mac?
Yeah.
We don't even know this person. Like, she just came on the show, and I already think they have better chemistry, romantic chemistry, than the main lead and then her new boy toy. It's like, I think maybe they thought that, I guess they did a lot of groundwork into the romance that Lincoln and Daisy had in season 2. And I think I would buy that if it had continued. I don't know what changed, but like in season 2, Lincoln and Daisy do have genuine chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know what changed, but with this season,
it's just gone. Yeah.
I can't find it. What happened? Mm-hmm. It's so weird how they had it and then it just evaporated.
I just think they didn't know how to really bring them together. Like, just bring them together. Like, what? Because the chemistry that they had, it was just all about their inhuman stuff. But, like, what about their regular thing, you know? Like, what is there for them to connect to? You know, because you have Fitz and Simmons with the whole science stuff. You know, they work together on that. They get excited about any sort of sciencey thing that they get. And that's cool. And then you have Coulson and Rosalind, where they just have, you know, little things in common that they're kind of like, oh, shoot, hey, you like this? Yeah, I like this too. And then that's how, that scene with the whole, he's like, oh, nice ride. And she's like, yeah, thanks, and all that. And he keeps looking at it, and she goes, eyes up here, and all that. Like, that works so well. Instant chemistry. What's there for them to connect to in these episodes? You know, even in that conversation that they had in the episode, he was just like, oh, you know, I wouldn't mind, you know, staying here and all that. I think you could have done something more with that. You know, he was really bothered by what Coulson was doing. Maybe he could have talked to her about that. She's like, Coulson was pretty intense and all that, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, maybe she could have talked him through it, you know, let this, you know, she could have talked him to transitioning into S.H.I.E.L.D., how he transitioned her into being an inhuman. I mean, that could have worked. I don't know. Yeah, that's just the thing.
Oh, okay. And then welcome back everyone to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. coverage. This is I didn't have a joke. I'm not repeating the top of the show. I'm just like, this is what it says here in the review, to be clear about that. This writer is Alex McLevy, and I think this is the point where I think they take over for the reviews for the AV Club. I'll be taking over weekly reviews. And I look forward to hearing your thoughts in the comments. As always, I encourage, okay, Excelsior, whatever. Okay, so I guess we have said goodbye to Oliver Sava. And now we're going to have Alex McLevy for AV Club. Quickly with Eric Goldman on IGN. I have to admit, I rolled my eyes a bit when the S.H.I.E.L.D. mid-season premiere began with 3 months from now. Yeah, how do you feel about that, David? Think it was all, it was okay, or... I'll tell you something. When I was watching season 3B, I had some issues from the first time. For one, I really missed Bobby and Hunter, and it got me a little bit like bummed out. And then when it came to the last 5 episodes, they kept teasing who will die on the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. season finale. And I'm like, do we really want to go with that? Like, it's just like, okay, whatever. But like, I mean, it's fine. It's not terrible. What do you think about like starting off the mid-season like this?
I mean, it's a common thing in a lot of cable shows. They always want to tease who's going to die, or, you know, they want to tease what the heck happened to this thing, you know, like what's going to happen, just to like, you know, keep audiences engaged and all that. I really don't mind it. I think the cool thing with this one is the cross thing, because you're kind of because you see that and then you see it on Yo-Yo and you're kind of like, oh, shoot, you know. Like, are they already revealing to us who's going to die or something? And then you see where, you know, how it just keeps going to one person to another and all that. Like, that's a really cool way to kind of keep teasing us as to who the heck is going to die. I remember in Arrow, they were doing that too. It's just like, who's going to die in this one? And you're kind of like, I mean, it's not going to be your main character. It's not going to be this person.
I mean,
the only one is just like, who do we dislike the most here? And then you can just figure it out from there. And that's it. I remember in Arrow when they did that, and I'm just kind of like, I honestly didn't really care much for this character. You know, she was cool and all, but I can move on. You know, for any show, really, they don't really take much risks. So,
yeah. Eric says, still, the scene we got was so random. It succeeded and it piqued my curiosity. A spaceship, floating blood, and then an explosion engulfing someone inside the ship wearing a S.H.I.E.L.D. uniform. A pretty intriguing out-of-context scenario. The floating cross was interesting, too, given this was an episode where Mac and the newly introduced Yo-Yo both spoke about their faith, which would make us easily assume it's one of them in the ship, but probably too easy. As for the episode itself, there were some rough spots, but ultimately several notable events occurred. Yo-Yo's abilities were portrayed in a cool way, showing her strange speedster powers, which slingshots. We see what you did there, Eric. Her back to where she started, beginning with her opening takedown of those cops. And I really dug seeing her and Daisy team up in the conclusion as she disarmed their opponents while Daisy would take them out. Coulson's phone conversation with Gideon was fun, and I'm in wait-and-see mode on Hive, the inhuman being now inside Ward's corpse. Brett Dalton did a good job showing this was not Ward, as he spoke in a calm, methodical manner. But we really haven't seen him in action yet to know what he can do. The end made it seem like he was about to kill Guerra, but I wonder if instead he might amp up his powers or do something else to show that would show his might. I'm so glad to see President Alice, that's William Sadler, once more reprising the role from Iron Man 3, meeting with Coulson simply because it had to be continued, murky how much S.H.I.E.L.D. was or was not connected to the government, especially after Gonzalez's other S.H.I.E.L.D. storyline occurred. At least now we understand that they are officially unauthorized, with the ATCU being their new public front. Though I'd still like to know who's funding them and paying everyone who works there. But having Talbot now headline the ATCU, but answering to Coulson would be amusing. Really, when it comes to like who's funding S.H.I.E.L.D., it's ABC Television Network. Who else?
Mm-hmm.
I get it's nice Daisy decided to let the would-be secret warriors live their own lives and be on call when needed, but really? It's taken forever to even just get four members, and two of them aren't even going to be around. It seems like the secret part is too secret if they aren't even actually an ongoing group. One other thing that bugged me in the episode, Hunter revealing he tried awakening in human powers via fish oil and Bobby admitting she was tempted to do as well, all treated as a throwaway wacky joke. It just seemed like it was downplaying what actually could have been a notable subplot. It's just a joke, Eric.
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, I think that is a genuine thought anyone else would have had, and it just makes complete sense. And then at the very least, it was those two. It makes sense with those two. Because Mac looking at them being like, why the fuck would you do that? You know, that makes sense that he would not take any chance with this because, you know, he got messed up by one alien thing. He doesn't want to get messed up by another. And I think he can just leave it up in the air for the rest. Do I think Coulson would have taken it? I think he would be tempted, but I don't think he would have chosen it at the end. And then May, I feel like she would have taken it. I don't know. No, she would not. Actually, I'm wrong. Horrible wrong.
Yeah. Let's go to the Reddit comments. It's nice that they let Joey take the role of acclimating to the newbie into the role of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Secret Warriors in the scope of her new powers, the same way Sky and Mac introduced it to him in the season premiere. It really shows his growth since then. Even if it's been off screen. Well, they were not kidding about the first 40 seconds. Also, I'm so glad it didn't drag the whole Fitz killed Ward thing. I'm not quite sure what this new beginning means for them, but I'm so down for it. I get why Joey and Yo-Yo got downgraded to the minors, but so that they can keep bringing in new Inhumans without it getting clustered. But damn, if Joey didn't get shit done this week. Oh my god. There was more chemistry between Mac and Yo-Yo in 5 minutes than Quake and Lincoln have ever had. Oh my god.
Yep.
Well, it just seems to be a universally accepted thing at this point. Jeez. Brett Dalton had less than 10 minutes of screen time, and he's already fucking killing it in this role. I cannot wait to see what he has in store for us. That's, yeah. I loved how they built up Daisy's entrances with little quakes, heralding her arrival, made her badass. It's so awesome. The room just starts shaking and most people are confused, and then bam, the door comes It is kind of comical too. Mac and Bobby in the exact same like tied up situation. They're like, yeah, you'll see. Mm-hmm. You'll see what's about to happen just now. It's fun. Gosh. Let's see here. More along the same comments that we've already been seeing here. Nothing too different. Yo Mac are the one true pair. So again, people were already shipping those two from the very beginning. It's Yak, damn it. Oh my god. Yeah. Yak? That's the ship name. I found it really interesting that when Mac and Yo-Yo were having that conversation about powers and faith, and that it's the first time Mac has even mentioned him having some sort of faith. I wasn't really expecting a follow-up with Daisy as them bonding, but it didn't happen. I mean, I was expecting, but it didn't happen. The way that line was executed by Mac didn't seem to me that he was saying that just to appeal to Yo-Yo, but a genuine answer, and that he hadn't considered the connection between powers and faith. It brings up a whole new layer with the Inhumans, perhaps the culture when Afterlife was around, of it having a spiritual slash religious component, along with the coming of age aspect. Considering that, maybe Terra Genesis is the equivalent of baptism? Lincoln did say that Inhuman powers weren't random, that the powers were to fill an evolutionary purpose, a literal intelligent design. So it would make sense how some people would lean into predestination and religion. Really interesting commentary there about how that would be, I guess, received or acknowledged by some people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go ahead and go over to our final individual that we go to for an opinion here. We're going to go over to Ami.
Hey, at least you know he's on the up and up. That's one good thing out of the situation. You could trust Talbot. He's got a code. He's got honor, at least, in some capacity. But yeah, okay, going back to the ward thing real quick. So they did say the sandstorm of this thing is related. So it can become it. And he's talking about, you know, I'll make a believer out of you once I made a believer out of him, you know, talking to Gaskos there. And then the sandstorm went out. And we talked about before about the potentiality of him budding and controlling in humans. Is that what he's about to do? He's about to make him basically a thrall, an extension of himself. Or is there something else, some other mechanic to that? Which is interesting, though, because it also throws into a question on a lot, a huge old wrench into a lot of my speculations on how it works for Ward himself, because they did say his body did die. And then when he turned into sand, you could see the muscle, the bone, and all that kind of, and Ward's skin peeling away. So if he keeps doing this, will Ward even exist? Is there a possibility of Ward coming back? I mean, I'm sure there will be. I just don't see the bridge there. I don't see the path to that. Well, actually, no. Oh my god, this would be so fucked up. Okay, so again, I've talked about this before. The only thing I know about future seasons, and that's because while this was going on, they pushed the marketing really heavily about Gabriel Luna's Ghost Rider. With Ghost Rider, we know souls are involved, and that's next season, I think. I'm pretty sure it was season 4 that Ghost Rider pops up, because there was, a huge media push for it. I'm just wondering what if Ward does die to this thing, but somehow makes some kind of deal, his soul climbs out, he Kratos his way out of the afterlife. Or as a demon, for all I know. I don't know, it's fucking Ward. It's interesting, though, because this actor... Again, I don't know the actor's name after all this time. I do not know the actor's actual name. He gets to play up a wholly different thing here, as opposed to what he's done with these different arcs and feelings and moods for Ward. He just gets to be a wholly other beast with this creature, because he's no longer any extension of Ward other than the physical body. So like the mannerisms and the contortions and just the way he carries himself is so different. So as an actor, I'm sure that's got to be really fun. And I like that Malik is, As much as he is a believer, he's pragmatic enough to know not to give all of your faith into something. And now he's like, hey, Coulson survived going in and going out, and you came back, and he's still alive. Everybody else that got sent over is still alive. So are you even what you say you are if you allowed that guy to live? And yeah, challenging it, but he's like, hey, I'll prove it to you. Still collecting in humans. And they scooped up that one guy from Columbia, the Medusa Eyes, as they called him. He was able to basically petrify people, shutting down their nervous system, everything. You know, they turn gray, they lock up, they seize, they also go numb. We learned that as well. So yeah, I love that though, Joey, and the utilization of his powers, like the sunglasses the guy was using to cover them up so that he wasn't making eye contact with his victims, and he just melted them to his face. And apparently though, they were able to pick him up, and maybe their doctors are able to undo that. And like, but like, is he going to have scarring around his eyes now? Is he going to look even more wicked? And who else do they have on their side that Lash maybe didn't get to? We know DeCascos, that's one. And then there's this guy they just scooped up as well. But on our side, we got Joey, we got Lincoln, we got Daisy. Now we have this woman. I don't even remember her name, to be honest. What was her name? Elena Rodriguez, otherwise known as Yo-Yo. And that's such a great name, because she's not just a typical speedster either. She's not just super speed. The way they visualized it, though, was really, really cool. But she can only go out as far as she can get in a single heartbeat, and then she'll snap back to her originating spot. So she'll just blah, 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 blah. Unfortunately, if you understand her power, that does leave her extremely vulnerable. Thankfully, she can do a lot in a little amount of time, and the likelihood of, you know, catching her off guard is small, but you can plot around that. So she's got to learn how to strategically use her power, because right now, obviously, she's been going up against people that she's more than capable of outwitting, outmaneuvering, outsmarting, people who are not equipped to challenge her, but that's changing. She's entering a whole other world now that she's kind of put herself out there. Like when she went up to Medusa Guy. Like, she did get to him, but she still caught a little glimpse and went slingshotting right into the wall because she was paralyzed after that. There's moments like that where she does become vulnerable. So, I don't know. And I like that there's this idea that while Daisy is building out her team, you know, they're opening up this trust in this way to allow them to live their lives, but people are doing their own thing in their own neck of the woods. Like, she's doing good here. She's got family here. And, you know, they can't make her come along for the ride and join the team, but she is a good asset, and they are trying to do the same things. But instead, like she said, like when she was in her hacker group, they didn't all live in the same place, but they were still able to communicate, network, and figure things out and come together and work together. That's why they gave her the smartwatch to keep in touch, so if anything does happen, she can basically be summoned, be called upon, and vice versa. It's a two-way street. If she needs help, they'll be there. If they need help, she'll be there. See, that's another thing, too, about her power, though, is like she can't necessarily just run to them either, you know? It's interesting. I like it because, again, you could get really broken with super speed, and that's one of the things that, like, especially in later seasons of The Flash, the more the show went on, creating scenarios in which Barry just can't automatically solve the problem in an instant becomes increasingly difficult to do, and a lot of the times they kind of fail to do. So, like, this kind of limits her ability to a point where she can't just break every scenario. Daisy was trying to come up with this plan with Joey, and she was able to just bop, 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 and it's done. They did it. That's exactly how that should have worked with somebody like that with this ability. And they played it up. But she can't permanently be on the team, and she's got limitations. She can't do a citywide run of everything. She couldn't clear the entire building if she wanted to. And I don't know. I like that. Because, like, again, super speed can get super busted whenever you try to incorporate it into your stories. Hell, it can solve, like, 90% of your problems. But that's a smart way to work around it. Coulson, though, he's on that warpath. You know, we got enough nuggets that we needed to make a hit into Gideon Malik's operations, even having to publicly show that he's pulling out and closing down offices because of the financial hit he just took to his organization, thanks to our team. So I like seeing that. Well, the relationship with the president coming in to talk to Coulson and at least acknowledge that they will stop hunting S.H.I.E.L.D. They're no longer a rogue agency. They're more or less this covert black ops group that they kind of just have to accept that they need in the world. There's an advantage to not allowing them to be seen in the light of day in the public eye, because again, like you said, public memory does not forget that quickly. So you can't just green light them and reintroduce them into the world and you know, not have a little bit of a pushback from that because of everything that happened before. And plus, they're just way more useful to be able to work off the books without any responsibility coming back to them. So they got the green light, but it's just, I don't know. I like that. It gives them their autonomy, their freedom, and something they haven't had up until this point. And I like that that's what's come out of this at the end of the day. Like, Rosalind's trust in Coulson paid off in the end. The way they utilized Lincoln in this episode I thought was really cool, with him jolting Werner's brain to get past that traumatic event so they could dive into his memories to get that information so Coulson could make that jump to get Merrick. I thought that was really cool, especially with him coming around and joining the team, because he, just like Joey would have had, he was given the opportunity to leave and go and have a life, but he decided to stay here with Daisy, making himself kind of a part of the team, which is also nice. The whole thing with Fitz and Simmons, I loved all that, because obviously there's a distance, there's a guilt that Fitz is carrying around because of what happened. Now he's rethinking in the moment. It's like, in the moment, he made a Twitch call to shoot him and burn his body with that flare. And he's like, well, I don't know, could he have been saved? He's like running through these scenarios because he feels guilty because he knows that Simmons cares. And he's like wrestling through, was that subconscious? Was that part of him that didn't want them to be together? Was that a selfish act, or was there more that he could have been done? He's running through this thing over and over again in his head, and it's caused this distance between him and Simmons because he feels like he let her down. But at the end of the day, like, he's gone above and beyond in so many different ways. She tried to get him involved in what her and Lincoln were working on just to kind of talk to him because she misses his interactions, like, since he's been back. I don't know. It's just like, these little moments, it's just really sweet. And the way that paid off to them towards the end, it was just so heartwarming, like how much she just misses what they had. And despite everything they went through, like, she's like, let's just start over. And they do the whole introduction thing. And I hope we finally get to a spot where they can just be together. That's my hope. That's my hope. And then obviously we opened with that jump ahead, that 3-month jump into the future from the present day, which was this episode. And there's that jet, you know, the jet from the group's plane, the little baby one that comes and nests in the top. And then in the zero gravity, there's just little droplets of blood just floating in the air, some debris, and then Elena's necklace and a body that just has the shield patch. So as we know, she's now agreed to be called upon if they need her. And I'm hoping that's not her, but I think that's kind of what they're teeing up, which has me super scared. Or it could be anybody else, and that her necklace just ended up on that plane. You know, it could be a fake out, could be a red herring. You know, it could be somebody posing as a SHIELD agent, and that's their corpse up there, and maybe they snagged the necklace off of her before they died and she was able to get away. But it is a great drama like element to bring that in there. It just reminds me of like the pool scenes in Breaking Bad, with the bear in the water, and then you just jump back and you're like, how the fuck, what's gonna, and it just creates this tension. It's just really, really clever, and it just makes me wonder if there's going to be a fake out or some level of deception involved in that, because it's what that's reminding me of. So I don't know, I'm just being hopeful, because again, much like with Rosalind and Coulson, I loved the interaction between those two. It was just so electric. And I think, like, as funny as it was, all those scenes with her and Mac were really fun, despite the kidnapping, despite all the stuff. Like, the way they were able to talk through their language barrier as well was also really cute. And also the fact that she apprehended him, tied him up, and then they're just, the way they kind of worked through that and their final little moments, it was really cute. I don't know if they're meaning to set anything up there, but I just thought that was really endearing. And it's just another one of those things, especially with that open, especially with what happened with Rosalind, that's got me really scared to even be happy or smile around any of these characters at all when they're introduced like this. So, I don't know.
All right, we can stop right there. David, do you have any thoughts before we close out today? Overall, I thought, I mean, this was a solid, very good episode that, as usual, just, you know, gets us a opportunity to catch our breath, but not for too long, because it's already setting things up and we're already getting the train rolling. We got introduced to a brand new character who is going to be a huge part of the show for the remainder of the show, and just a classic episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. David.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, everything you just said. I mean, we said it during when watching the episode and all that. I like Omni's breakdown of it. Especially the part with the whole speedster thing that he was kind of worried about, yeah, how she might be overpowered and all that. Although, to be fair, I would have trusted these writers to handle her powers far better than even what they did with The Flash. You know, they had a great run in the first season, but yeah, as the seasons kept going.
Remind the viewers at home, how many seasons did The Flash go on for?
Oh my gosh, how long actually? Almost 10 maybe?
I thought it was 10 seasons.
Yeah, let me see. Let me look it up real quick.
I think it was because...
Flash...
How do you do that?
Yeah, and I mean, every once in a while, they get 9 seasons. Holy shit.
It was 9 seasons?
Yeah, and every once in a while, there will be an episode, you know, where they, like, utilize it really well. But one of the best ones was when this, like, nuke was gonna go off in the middle of the city. But, like, no, it went off. Like, it's, you literally see it, like, expanding. But with the Flash, you know, he slows down time and everything. And at some point, he just stops it. He's just like, okay, how do I fix this? You know? Because like it's literally exploding right in front of his face, but he slowed down time enough so he got to figure it out. And then he goes like, okay, you, the friend that can like teleport things, okay, you open it. But he's in Flash time, you know, in stop mode, like stopping time. So his portal is just like a little baby thing that just pops up and it doesn't work. Okay, that's out. Let me get other Flashes here that I know. Hey, if we throw like our lightning together, we can probably stop it. From, you know, keep it going off more. They try it, but then one of the Flashes is down because he was super old. You know, like his powers aren't working the same. So now, okay, that's out. And so as like the episode keeps going on and on and on, he's doing like all the math, trying to figure everything out. But it's just him because everyone else is on pause, and he starts like sweating more and more because he keeps using his powers. And so like it just keeps building up. It's like it's really one of the best episodes of the show. And I'm sure these writers probably could have figured something out too with her powers. And I mean, they kind of did later on how they upgraded her. So,
yeah.
These writers, I think they could have done something way cooler with it. But oh well, I still like what they did though with this. It does, you know, what is it? What's the word? I don't know. She's not overpowered. That's what I was trying to say. Thing.
Okay.
And then I forgot what else he was bringing up, but yeah, overall good episode.
Yeah. Thank you. Those of you who watched and were commenting along. If you have any questions, again, if you have any comments about anything that we said or anything that was covered in the episode. And of course, if you have any materials that you wish for us to react to that revolve the show, particularly those that maybe of episodes that we covered or what we're currently covering, go ahead and do that. Stay under our spotlight for more content and more, and we will see you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.